30 years as a CFL official, now he's evaluator, Bud Steen joins us. And Bud, we have lots to discuss, lots of questions. I want to start with this one. Came in from Brian. Going back to the Toronto game. So the two shorter yards in the end zone obviously came into play there, no question about it.
Yep.
So that might have been something. So the first one, let the receiver, if he wanted to, if he looks down and he's like, uh-oh, if I catch this, I'm out of bounds. He could have jumped up and batted the ball down in the end zone and then scooped it up, right? That's legal?
Yeah.
Because it's like a fumble.
With the application of our illegal participation rule now, if Rainey had seen that he was standing on the dead ball line after the ball had been snapped for the field goal attempt, there is nothing he could do.
Okay.
He's pooched for that play.
Because it's illegal. He's basically out of bounds. You can't come into play. Okay.
In the CFL in 2019, you cannot return to the field of play. I've put in a recommendation for a rule change for next year that we adopt a rule similar to the NFL, that if a player leaves the field of play, he can reestablish himself. He can come back in, get both feet into the field of play, and then continue to play. And then there would be an exception if he did it to avoid another player. It's the inadvertent stuff that we want to get rid of, or at least I want to get rid of. We'll see if Rules Committee agrees with me. But on that one, he was in trouble.
But had he not been out of bounds, yep. If he's at the back and he's like, I can't go back any farther, I'm going to stand here, I can jump up with my hand, bat it down onto the ground, and then pick it up, that's all legal.
Yep. And then it would be up to him to get it out of the goal area because BC had kicked it in. BC are going to get a point unless Toronto can get that ball fully out of the goal area.
Yeah, he has to run it or he can't throw it. He has to run it or kick it.
Correct. If he throws it out, it's an offside pass, and BC will take it back to the origin of the offside pass, i.e. the goal area, single point, game over. If he kicks it out, he can kick it out of bounds, and our rule says if you kick a ball out of the field of play, it belongs to the other team where it goes out of bounds, but there's zeros on the clock, so there'd be no score, and the game's over. Well, the game's tied, now we go to overtime. And, of course, he could have run it out and turtled. As long as he gets the ball fully out of the goal area, no point, and carry on. So, I mean, it was unfortunate for him because he didn't have a lot of extra room there. There's no question.
I'm actually surprised the Lions didn't just punt it through the end zone, to be completely honest. I know that they look at that and say, well, that's kind of gutless. Who cares? Within the rules.
It's a point. You win the game.
Now, in the Hamilton-Montreal game in the fourth quarter, there was a Montreal punt by Beattie, and it was partially blocked by Gray, and the punt traveled over the line of scrimmage. However, Gray, due to his own momentum, ran into Beattie and knocked him down, resulting in a rough of the kicking penalty being assessed. Is this a new rule?
It's not a new rule. It's a new interpretation, I would say, or a new standard. The roughing or contacting the kicker rule is pretty much the same this year as it has been in the past. The defensive players, the blocking players, have to avoid making contact with either the kicking leg or the body of the kicker. If the contact is made on the kicker's plant leg, it's roughing. If it's on the kicking leg, it's contact. Any excessively rough contact on the kicker or punter is going to be a UR. However, this year, in our standards book that we distribute to all of the clubs, should a player touch the ball prior to making contact with the kicker, they can still be called for roughing the kicker. And also this year, the blocking team, the defensive team, must provide a clear landing zone for the kicker. So sometimes you'll see the fellow who's coming in to attempt the block slide on the ground, and then the kicker comes down, and there's no place for him to land, and he falls down. Well, you could break an ankle doing that. So we've put that one on the defense as well. And the one thing that listeners need to consider. There's really no reason why a player attempting to block should be that close to the kicker, because it's not that they're trying to collapse the kicker. They're going to the block point, which is about 2 or 3 feet in front of the kicker's foot. So the ball has left the kicker's foot, and that's what they're trying to get to, the block point. And so that's why the rules are as strict as they are. That's why that was determined to be roughing the kicker.
Okay. Because didn't before, basically, like if you dove through there, and as long as you got a piece of the ball, it seemed to always be once you hit the ball first, it was kind of like if you trip a guy in a breakaway, but you hit the puck first and he falls down, there's no penalty.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, it could not be excessive. I did once call roughing the kicker against a fellow who had touched the ball, but he grazed the football and then continued to charge into the kicker. And so there was enough of an instant in my mind that the player made the conscious decision. So it was essentially two acts: touch the ball, then knock the hell out of the kicker. And so, you know, you still had to be somewhat careful, but you are absolutely correct. We've tightened the standard up considerably this year.
Now, why is that? Were you seeing, like, was it being taken advantage of?
Guys were getting hurt. Yeah. And the special players are unique in our game and critical to our game. So kickers, punters, obviously quarterbacks, are fellows that are players that we're really serious about protecting, and they are also in an extremely vulnerable position. We've also adopted a rule on hitting defenseless players as well. We haven't seen much of it, but harken back a couple of years in a Saskatchewan Calgary slugfest in Regina. And guys were teeing off on receivers who were extending their bodies to catch passes and then taking helmets or shoulders in the middle of the spine. So we've got to be protecting receivers as well, who have fully extended their bodies and lack the capability or the ability to protect themselves from the hit that comes virtually immediately on them. So we're trying to get serious. We're trying to walk the talk here in terms of player protection, and we can see that once we start going through an analysis of fouls year to date, that in fact is taking place. And does it upset fans? Sure it does. Fans don't like flags, but we've got to protect these guys.
But Steen joins us inside the stripes. We'll take a quick break. I want to come back. We've got a few more questions to get to from some of the listeners. But also, we're going to run down. We're basically a month into the CFL season. It's interesting on the penalties from this year to last year and which penalties are up. But a lot of penalties are down. Now, I know Eskimo fans are like, what are you talking about? Because the Eskimos are up personally as a team. But across the board, there's a lot of penalties in areas that I'm kind of surprised that are down. But there is one that is major, major increase in penalties this year. We'll discuss it next on Edmonton Sports Theater, TSN 1260. You're listening to Jason Greger Show. But I was running through the penalties that you provided us from last year until now. And the one number that stands out the most, because if you look, a lot of the penalties are down that I think people would like. Offensive offside is down. You look at defensive offside. That is down. Objectionable conduct is down. Punting the ball out of bounds is actually down significantly. Mm-hmm. But the one that is up the most, the biggest increase by far, it's not even close, is unnecessary roughness penalties. Through the first 4 weeks of the season, there's been 65 of those called, whereas there was only 36 last year. Yep. That's basic. 30 more from last year. So on average, if you just look at it per week, we're talking 7 more per week, 7.5. Is it simply because of the new guidelines to protect? Because this isn't roughing the passer. This is unnecessary roughness, which sometimes can occur on the passer.
Right. So for the most part, yes. The increase in the number of URs flagged would be because of a heightened interest or a desire to protect the players. However, we are also seeing at least one ball club who are playing an extremely aggressive form of football this season, the local team. The Eskimos are, they're not holding back. Phil Lawley's defense is seriously aggressive. And
but as Brock Sutherland told us on Jason Moss, the pre and post, like the pre-snap and then post-play penalties, those are the ones that really frustrate me, because sure, there should be no excuse on
sure
that.
And honestly, if I were a coach and I had a player who took a couple of roughness penalties because he was aggressive and he was attacking his opponent, as long as they weren't what I would fashion to be stupid penalties, you know, I couldn't be too critical of them, because I would want my players to be aggressive. If you lay back in this league, it's going to cost your club yards and points. But yeah, I mean, Edmonton has certainly gotten more than its share of unnecessary roughness penalties this season to date, and they're working hard on it. We're at practice every day. The coach is emphasizing that the players have to be very aware of what they're doing and what their opponent is doing. But a lot of this is roughing the passer. And there's just, as everyone has seen, if you're watching the game closely, there have been a lot of roughing the passer fouls called either on the field or with the assistance of command center.
John asks, if the ref has the discretion to not call a rough in the passer penalty, if it's clear that the defensive player was being blocked in such a way that he was unable to see the ball had already been thrown.
It's up to the defensive player to know when the ball is gone.
Okay.
And you cannot come off a block and make contact, illegal contact with the passer. If it's bang, bang, that is, you're off the block and you hit the quarterback in the strike zone virtually immediately as the pass is thrown, you're not going to get flagged, or it should not be an unnecessary roughness penalty. But if he comes off a block and pops the quarterback in the head, he's going to get a flag every time.
Okay. Is there a penalty for kickers or punters who flop and dive but are not hit from CK? Well, it's just called objectionable conduct.
We added a penalty. Off air, I was saying.
Saying, BC's punter last year, yeah, wasn't he diverama?
Yes, he was. He liked flopping. He got us a few times. Fans that attend games in Edmonton might recall one here where he flopped and referee fell for it. And at that point, there was no clear.
Could you reverse that now?
Yeah, we can fix that now.
Okay.
if we have a clear shot of it. And so as an example, you could potentially have a play where the referee has flagged for contacting the kicker or roughing the kicker, and when the command center looks at it and they see no contact but a flop, we could turn what would have been a 15-yard advantage and first down for the offense into a 10-yard disadvantage. And interestingly enough, objectionable conduct is what is in the category of what we call major fouls. So that objectionable conduct penalty could be applied to the advantage of the defending team. So the receiving team could apply it from either the point ball held when they catch the punt, or from the point ball dead. So he runs the ball for 10 yards. Well, we can add 10 more onto that for that flop that the punter shouldn't have performed.
Now, what constitutes a catch now? Has it changed? Because, you know, there was that deep pass on the side during the Montreal game. It was rule complete, but after the challenge, it was changed to incomplete. And the standard on the field of what constitutes a catch is a player has to survive his contact with the ground in order for it to be ruled a catch.
Right.
But then the challenge, they ruled it incomplete.
Let's see. Oh, yeah, so on that play in the Montreal game, the field official determined that it was a completed pass. And on review, there was a coach's challenge. It was determined by the command center that he did not survive contact with the ground. I had a great debate with coach yesterday at the practice. He argued that should have been a completed pass.
In the Eskimo game?
Yeah. In the Montreal game.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Jason was of the view that he had possessed that ball for a moment of time, a sufficient period, that it should have been complete. So I presented him the full standard once again. We discussed it, and he now understands that not only does there have to be a moment of time where he possesses the ball, but he also has to survive contact with either the ground, and that in that case, or in cases in the middle of the field, he has to survive contact by the opponent, so that if he's up in the air and gets the ball into his hands, if an opponent comes in and hits him hard enough and that thing burps out, then that's an incomplete pass. Interesting, there was a very interesting play in the Winnipeg game where the Edmonton receiver was in the air and had the ball in his hands, got hit, ball came out, and another Edmonton player fell on the ball on the ground. And what Edmonton was looking for in that instance was that was a completed pass followed by a recovery of a fumble. And Winnipeg challenged, that's what the ruling on the field, the ruling on the field was incomplete. Edmonton challenged, and Command Center, who can only change clear and obvious errors from the material that was being provided to Command Center, were unable to meet their standard, that is, clear and obvious errors, so they stuck with the call on the field to Edmonton's disadvantage. Edmonton has now challenged three times and won zero of them. So their time's coming. They're going to start winning some of their challenges, hopefully.
And one last one for you, and this is really not a rule change, but the head official is now wearing the white hat instead of black. Why?
Well, that's an interesting question. I guess far better to have six clean hats and one dirty hat than one clean hat and six dirty hats. White hats tend to get dirtier faster. In amateur football in Canada, it is white hat for referee and black hat for all the other officials. The CFL was the only league where it was black for referee and white for everyone else. And it was determined in the offseason that it warranted a shift. I don't know if black hats are cheaper. I have no idea. I mean, but really, nothing turns on it. Nothing at all.
Okay. And hey, guys, I thought the ground can't cause a fumble. Well, here's the difference. A fumble means you have possession.
Correct.
When you go to catch a pass and you're up in the air, you aren't in possession until your feet come down and you regain possession for one or two steps, make a football play, whatever you want to call it.
Right. Now, the ground can cause a fumble. If a player is running down the field and the turf monster gets him and he falls on his face and the ball pops out, that is a live football. Nobody touches him. Boom, he hits the ground, and that ball's out. That's a live football.
Well, no one's touching him.
Right.
But if someone touched him.
If somebody knocked him down there, then correct. Then he's dead, and the ball is right there.
Bud, good stuff. Hey. We look forward to see what comes up next week. I'm going to be watching very closely the unnecessary roughness totals, because that's the number that stands out the
most. Yeah, it does.
65 through 4 weeks compared to 36 through 4 weeks last season. That is a major, major jump. Appreciate it.
Right on.